This is the Bears Barroom Radio Network, and the following is suitable for all audiences.
It's been great. I told Dad, that's been the message. There really wasn't a day where you look back and you say, man, that was pretty bad. There were some days that weren't great, not perfect, but that's expected. But for the most part, really happy. I learned a lot. I really did. And I knew there's going to be growing pains. But what's happened is I've had the coaches and the players really help me out. There was really no resistance. They understood kind of our message. We've done it together. And so they helped make it a lot easier for me. The message I have to the team as well is that I want our team to have swag. That's confident, and I don't want them going out there trying to play and think that they're going to make mistakes. I want them to play with a little swag, a little edge to what they do, and they're letting their personality show. You make a mistake, just don't do it again, and they're letting loose.
Cheers, Bears fans! This is Bears on Tap. And you just heard snippets of Bears head coach Matt Nagy's final address to the media until training camp opens in mid-July. My name is Aldo Gandia, and I apologize for getting this show out later than planned, but I think we've got one that's worth the wait. My guest today is Bears Barroom scouting analyst Danny Shimon. Now, I say Bears Barroom scouting analyst Danny Shimon because Danny is now an official member of the Barroom. You will, over the 2018 season and hopefully beyond, see Danny have a bigger presence on our podcast, website, and video reviews. Exciting things are ahead. On this show, I've asked Danny to provide an extensive scouting report on Mitch Trubisky. The reason I've asked for this extensive report is obvious. The more Mitch Trubisky grows in 2018, the more the Bears do. In fact, growth is the topic of my opening thought. So let's get to that, and then we'll bring Danny in for a one-hour discussion on Trubisky and the Bears. Okay, I want to share with you my five Chicago Bears players who must have outstanding seasons in the area of leadership and production in order for the Bears to make that one-season jump from last to first, or at least from last to a playoff contender. These five players are, in my mind, critical to the success of the Bears. Let's go from 5 to 1. At 5, Kyle Long. If you've heard me on the Barroom before talk about offensive line play, you know the value I put on the interior of the offensive line. The three inside pass protectors are now as critical to offenses as the tackles. Offenses are designed now to get rid of the ball quickly, and defenses have countered with more inside pass rushing stunts, blitzes, and we've seen better pass rushers at defensive tackle too. Seeing Long return to the way he played at his prime, and even better now that he has more knowledge, is a reasonable expectation if his injuries do not hamper his play. Additionally, seeing Long's take-no-prisoners leadership style is vital for an offensive line that has a passive Bobby Massey at right tackle and potentially a rookie at left guard in James Daniels. Kyle Long's reemergence to Pro Bowl status is critical. At 4, and it might be a surprise, but it shouldn't, Tariq Cohen. The second-year player's influence as a special teams player, running back, and pass receiver should be huge this year. Now that he has a coaching staff that believes in him, is properly teaching him, and giving him confidence means that every week we should expect at least 100 all-purpose yards from Cohen. This Bears coaching staff brings ingenuity to the organization. Tariq Cohen is the one player on this offense who they can be most creative with. If Cohen suffers from a sophomore slump, there are other players who can pick up the slack, but none who offer the versatility that Cohen possesses. Number 3, Danny Trevathan. We heard Bears defensive coordinator Vic Fangio talk about Danny T's development throughout OTAs. Fangio noted that because of injuries, the inside linebacker had not had the benefit of this valuable practice time in the past. As a result of the added work, Trevathan has looked sharp. He knows the defense like the back of his hand, so he's anticipating plays, and his good health is allowing him to react to what he sees. It's reasonable to expect Trevathan to better the numbers he had in his second year with the Broncos. 105 tackles, one fumble recovery, two sacks, and three interceptions. His play and leadership should also aid the development of rookie linebacker Roquan Smith and the number two player on my list, Leonard Floyd. After two seasons, Floyd has a total of 11.5 sacks. It's pivotal to the Bears that he get at least that many in his third season. He had seven last season, and then a knee injury ended his season prematurely during Game 12. The year prior, he suffered a season-ending concussion during Game 10. Floyd has to play 16 games this season, notch a dozen sacks, and take over the leadership role vacated by Pernell McPhee and Willie Young. That won't be easy for the soft-spoken pass rusher, but he says he's ready to take it on, and take it on he must. Number one is no surprise, Mitch Trubisky. In the upcoming interview with Danny Shimon, you will actually hear us compare Trubisky to Aaron Rodgers. Clearly, Rodgers has better qualities than Trubisky in some areas like arm strength and pocket awareness. But Trubisky could potentially develop a trait that makes him Rodgers-like, and that is the ability to disguise a team's weaknesses. With Rodgers in the lineup, the Packers almost look like a complete football team. Without him, every blemish on the team pops out and every tumor becomes malignant. Trubisky needs to take a step in that direction by keeping drives alive with his feet, protecting the football, making clutch throws, inspiring his teammates to play at a consistently high level, and more. These are qualities he's already exhibited, albeit in a limited and inconclusive manner. When Rodgers played his first full season as the Packers starter, he threw for over 4,000 yards, had 28 touchdown passes, and just 13 interceptions. It's stupid to expect Trubisky to accomplish those numbers. Rodgers studied the Mike McCarthy offense for three seasons before becoming the starter, and Trubisky is in year one of the Matt Nagy offense. But Trubisky should pass for over 3,000 yards, throw 20 touchdowns, and limit his interceptions to about the same number Rodgers had. If he accomplishes those numbers, and the other four players on my list play to their potential, the Bears will set the foundation for repeated playoff appearances starting in 2018. Okay, as promised, with me is Danny Shimon, and I want to begin by saying welcome to Bears Barroom Radio, welcome to thebearsbarroom.com, welcome to the Bears Barroom family. Danny Shimon is now an official member of Bears Barroom. Congratulations, I am so excited. We were able to hammer out our agreement. Welcome, Danny.
Thank you. I'm really, really excited to be part of the team. Really looking forward to work with everyone here. You, Bears Girl, Phil, Shane, everyone else associated with Bears Barroom. We're doing great things here. We're giving the Bears fans, listeners, a different view of the team. You know, we're getting down and dirty with the scouting. We're getting, you know, breaking down plays. We're doing off the field stuff. Or we got Phil recording, you know, making hits. I am very excited to be part of the team.
I guess maybe you might be the Trey Burton of the Bears Barroom. We're going to have you
I'm
all.
I'm the U tight end.
That's right. We're going to have you all over the field doing podcasts, doing scouting reports, just utilizing your really outstanding strengths of applying your scouting eye, your scouting experience to the Chicago Bears and to draft prospects. One of the things that we've been talking about, and we haven't finalized a lot of things yet, but one of the things we've been talking about is having you come on either through the podcast or through your writing or both just doing a series on potential Bears pass rushers that could be drafted in 2019. We know that a year ago it was the year of the quarterback. We knew that this year was going to be the year of wide receiver. And 2019 figures to be the year of the pass rusher. So it would be cool if during the course of the season you were pointing out to us potential players that the Bears could be targeting.
Yep. I mean, I've already started digging into 2019 tape. Knowing that the Bears could possibly have a need at pass rusher going into next year's draft, that's one area I'm concentrating heavily on. Also, during the college football season, when there's a premier matchup where you'll see a top of the draft type of pass rusher going up against a pretty good offensive lineman, we'll pinpoint that. We'll make a spotlight game for us so that Bears fans can hopefully watch that game and you can kind of get a glimpse or future look at what a prospect for the Bears could look like in college, and we'll break them down and we'll go through all that. So yeah, definitely looking forward to it. Like I said, already breaking down tape for next year's draft, trying to get ready and prepared and give the listeners some great quality content.
And I will tell our audience that during draft week, when we did a show on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday of draft week, I think maybe my favorite show was the one that you were on that Sunday, where we recapped the entire draft with special attention on the day three draft picks. And you were on, Emory Hunt was on, and Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com was on. Boy, that was just a great show. I think it was 2 to 3 hours of just pure football talk, and it was such a blast. And that's the kind of stuff that, I want to try to replicate often throughout the season. Just great football talk. People can tune into Bears Bar Room, whether it's through their podcast feed or through MixLR, our live radio channel, and just be engulfed with great football talk, fun football talk. And you'll be delivering that and much more. So welcome aboard again.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Like I said, I'm excited and looking forward to getting the work done and getting started.
Cool. And then one of the things that I'm really looking forward to learning from you, and we're going to share some of this knowledge today, is just how scouts work. For those who don't know, Danny studied under Greg Gabriel, who was the top guy in the draft room for the Chicago Bears. He was head of player personnel, correct?
He was a college scouting director for the Bears.
There you go. And one of the things that I'm really intrigued in wanting to learn is just what is it that scouts see? Let's learn some of the terminology. Let's apply it to Chicago Bears players and Chicago Bears prospects. And so today I thought it would be a really cool thing to do with Danny is to look at the key player for 2018 and beyond for the Chicago Bears. And that is, of course, the quarterback, Mitch Trubisky. Let's have Danny break him down as a scout so that we could learn more about what his strengths are, what are the things that he needs to work on, and then keep that in mind as we go through the season. There are things that, from my layman's eyes, I saw and that I've talked to Danny about, and then he kind of agreed. It's not that I'm a scout by any means. It's just certain things with his footwork that I saw, and Danny agreed and broke it down for me. So I'm going to have him share that and many other the other things regarding Trubisky from a scouting viewpoint. Now, this checklist that I'm presenting to Danny, and we're going to go down, is a scout checklist that was published on Athlon's 2018 draft guide. They did a really nice job of, before every position group, putting together a checklist and defining what it is the scouts were looking for. So we're going to use that scout checklist and just go from A to Z on Mitch Trubisky. So you ready, Danny?
Let's do this.
All right. We begin with arm strength, the ability to throw sideline and throw to the sideline and that deep ball. How does Mitch grade out? What do you see with his arm strength?
Coming out of North Carolina, Mitch, I graded him as having good arm strength, which basically means he's slightly above average. That's not a bad thing, right? So the one thing when you look at a quarterback and you're starting his tape, you want to see the more important throw are the out throws, right? The ones where he's got the inside hash or the boundary hash, and he's throwing the ball, the out route, to the outside the numbers on the opposite field, to the what we call the field side of the opposite sideline where it's you have the more of the open area of the field. You got to make sure that ball gets there on a line drive, because if you don't, if the ball is wobbly, or if there's, you know, he puts too much air underneath the ball, or if it's not a tight spiral, or he doesn't drive it, you know, the cornerback can undercut the route, can pick it off, and, you know, take it to the house, or, you know, for a pick six. So those types of throws, more so, those are more important than the deep throws, right? Because a lot of the quarterbacks can just rear back and just throw the ball deep. Mm-hmm. It's those out throws, the ones where, you know, it's 20 or 30 yards on a line drive towards the outside boundary, getting it there to the receiver, and obviously an accurate throw as well. So that is what we look for to determine arm strength. And then also when he's going downfield, is he able to lead the receiver, or does the receiver have to stop his route and come back to the ball? That also shows a lack of arm strength if the receiver is constantly having to cut off his route and come back to the ball. If he's leading the receiver downfield, is he throwing it in a bucket? I like calling them bucket throws. Basically, just, you know, putting air underneath it, you know, touch, and having it jump right into the receiver's hands like he's throwing it into a bucket.
Does Trubisky make those bucket throws with velocity and the necessary NFL velocity we want to see?
Yes, his out throws. He does them on a line drive. He drives the ball out there. If he can fit the ball into tight windows in the middle of the field, meaning, you know, he can get it in between two or three defenders into the receiver. And in terms of his deep throw, he throws a pretty deep ball. As a matter of fact, last season we saw a couple of them. The one in preseason against the Titans to Tanner Gentry down the left sideline, perfect ball, you know, hit him in stride, a bucket throw. And then he did it again in the regular season against the Packers to Josh Bellamy when he was, you know, same thing, same side of the field, led him down the field, bucket throw right into his arms into the end zone for a touchdown. So he has the ability to make all the NFL throws, and that's the key when you're looking at quarterbacks and arm strength. They might not have the strongest arm in the draft, mm-hmm. right? But he has the ability to make all the throws, and that's really all you really need.
And as a scout, do you gauge whether he's stronger throwing to that right sideline or left sideline? Does that matter at all?
Sure. I mean, perfect role. You want to see the guy make complete throws, all sides of the field, whether it's the left, right, or middle. Mm-hmm. If you see a tendency where he struggles, you know, driving it to his left, and he's a right-handed quarterback, maybe he's not opening up and he's not following through on his throws, getting more torque on the ball, getting out there. So you definitely want to, you know, you want to see an equal balance in terms of velocity, speed, accuracy on all types of throws, whether it's to the left, right sideline, or even down the middle of the field. You just want to see consistency. You want to see it. And that's why his setup, his motion, his follow through is all important in the right ways in the pocket.
Excellent. Now, the next thing on the scout checklist is his delivery. Is he deliberate? Does he have a fast, slow, or slow windup? And right. Based on what I've seen, the guy's got a pretty good delivery, doesn't he?
He's got a good release. He's got quick release. So what that means is, once the ball is in his hands, or, you know, typically in a shotgun formation, once he gets the ball in his hands, how quick does he set up? And how quick does he get the ball out of his hands into the receiver's hands? So with Trubisky, we saw last year, and we saw also in college, he's got a pretty good quick delivery. So his setup is quick. He's got quick feet. He can balance and get the ball into the receiver's hands pretty quick, which is something that I think is going to be emphasized more this season with the new coaching staff and the new offense he's going to be in.
Now, there were no mechanic issues with his delivery, correct? Like, I remember when Aaron Rodgers came out of Cal, that one of the things that the Packers worked with him on was his delivery. It seemed like he started with the ball low, and it was kind of a bit of a windup. And in those 2 years that he sat behind Brett Favre, 2 or 3 years, that they worked on his delivery, and boy, he gets that ball out just beautifully, like an artist. But Trubisky came out of college without having to really work on that, correct?
Correct. No, there was no hitch in his throw. A lot of times you'll see quarterbacks getting dinged for bringing the ball too far back. So they're kind of, they have a looping arm action where the ball comes kind of way back here, and they try to wind up to get it out.
Right.
He just quickly gets back. It's by his ear, really, you know, ear, shoulder area. And he's ready just to whip it out as soon as you see the receiver break or he's, you know, sees a guy come open. So he had no issues in terms of, you know, having any sort of a hitch in his giddy up or anything like that. As opposed to this year, where you know Sam Darnold, when we're studying his tape, I noticed that when he'd come out and he tried to throw those out passes, mm-hmm. when he tried to get more velocity on the ball, try to throw it on a straight line, you saw a bit of a hitch. You'd go farther back, trying to bring more torque, trying to create more of a drive on his ball, which is one of the things that I noticed on Sam Darnold, which is one of the reasons why I dinged him for his arm strength. So. But Trubisky, I didn't see any of that when I was watching his college tape.
Now, when it comes to the 3-5-step, 7-step drop back, any difference there in what you see in Trubisky's delivery and release quickness?
No, the only difference, obviously, 3-step drop, it's 1-2-3, get rid of the ball. So mm-hmm. he's got to be able to have it ready to go. 5-step stop, got a couple more steps to be able to, wait for a guy to get open. 7-step, he's going back and he's waiting for a receiver to get open downfield, most likely. But no, in terms of, quickness, in terms of, spinning the ball, I didn't see much of a difference between a 3-5 or 7-step drop when I was studying Trubisky's tape.
Cool. Now, what about anticipation, his timing? Does he have a natural feel for the passing game?
He does. The thing about Trubisky, when I was studying him, is we had a limited sample size, right? I mean, he was really only had 1 year as a starter, started 13 games for North Carolina, and he played in a hybrid spread system, meaning it wasn't a full spread system. They did have some plays where he was asked to read the entire field, and there was other plays where he was just strictly asked to read one half of the field. So. In terms of anticipation, you like to see a receiver, a quarterback throw a receiver open. What that means is when he throws it to a spot and he's anticipating his receiver getting to that spot, he's not throwing it at the receiver per se, because typically a lot of times these receivers have these defensive backs next to them or on their hip pocket. So these guys can either, get their hands in and knock the ball down, possibly even jump the route and, pick off the ball. So what you want to do is you want to throw it to a spot, and this also allows the receiver to catch the ball on the run and then also build up his yak, which is yards after the catch. You lead him to an alleyway where he catches the ball and he's got an opening. He's running away from the defender and he can go ahead and continue to pick up more yards after he's made the reception. So Trubisky showed that ability when we were studying his tape. He was able to throw it to a spot. There was times where you could see him leading a receiver, away from the defender. The receiver hasn't made his cut yet, but Trubisky knows where he's going, so he's got the ball, going to that spot, and then now it's incumbent upon the receiver to, obviously, stem the route, break free from the defender, and get to that spot and be able to catch the ball.
Okay, what about? Let's talk about his touch. The feel for the throw, the ability to throw over the defense, his timing and anticipation. You probably give him very high marks there, correct?
Yeah, I mean, he has one of his strengths coming out was the accuracy. He was able to, and like we talked about earlier with those bucket throws, right? He's able to get it over the first level of the defenders, which is typically, like the linebackers, and get it in between, drop it in between the first and second level of defense, where he's got it over the linebackers, but in front of the defensive back. So he's able to drop the ball in there. And as a matter of fact, with Trubisky, what was funny was, he was more accurate, in my opinion, he's more accurate on the run when he's rolling out, when he's asked to move the pocket, move his launch point. He was more accurate there than I saw when he was, actually standing back in the pocket. So, again, that's going to get better. I anticipate that getting better with, more reps, more experience. And, we even saw it last year in his first start against the Vikings. He had a couple of plays where they actually moved the pocket, and he made some brilliant throws to the sideline, where receivers, it was tight. It was to a spot where only the Bears receiver can make the catch, and it translated over from college to the pros. Unfortunately, for some reason, they didn't use it as often as I would like to have seen them use it last year, the Bears, that is. So hopefully, with this offensive staff, they'll utilize his mobility, which was another. Strength of his is his ability to get out, get away from the pocket, get away from the defensive front, and be able to, roll out and create plays on the outside.
Yeah, it seemed in last season and preseason they were having they were moving the pocket a lot, and Trubisky was really wowing us with his accuracy on the run. And then in that Vikings game, as you mentioned, he played really well throwing on the run, rolling out. But it was that one interception where he, under duress, ran to his right and then
threw the receiver.
And that seemed to scare the Hal Loggins away from calling rollout plays for the rest of the season. Kind of weird.
Yeah, watching Dahl call plays last year was pretty frustrating, as I'm sure a lot of BRS fans can attest to. But
it was like you told me over lunch that it was like Dahl playing Madden PlayStation, having no rhyme or reason for what he was calling.
Yeah, offensive coordinators typically they like to set up a play by calling previous plays, right? So, you know, they like to set up a big play by, you know, hitting a short gainer here, maybe a run here. But no, Dahl looked like he was just playing Madden. He was saying, all right, I'm going to try X this time. I'm going to flip the script. I'm going to go Y here. It's like it just the plays had no rhyme or reason. He wasn't calling one play to set up another play, you know. So it was frustrating. I'll just say, let's put it that way. It was frustrating watching Bears offense last year.
Now, Trubisky had a completion percentage of 59.4%, which was third among the rookies last year. Mahomes was at 63%, Deshaun Watson at 62%, and Mitch at 59.4%. Now, those two quarterbacks obviously had a smaller sample size. Watson left after four or five starts, and Mahomes just
I think Watson had seven starts, and I think Mahomes only had one start.
Correct.
But another thing we have to keep in mind is drop passes are also considered, you know, marks against the quarterback. That's an incomplete pass. So I wouldn't be too worried or too concerned about his completion percentage last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was dealing with some, you know, number three and four receivers at best, you know, running patterns for him. So there were a lot of drops. There were some bad throws, right? But again, he's a kid coming in with only 13 college starts under his belt, learning a whole new system, offensive system, you know, as a rookie NFL passer with subpar receiving options. So I would not be too concerned about his completion percentage from last season.
Great. Now, I know scouts grade on accuracy, the short, middle, and long. Where do you think Mitch is at his best, throwing the ball short, the medium, or long?
He grades out high on those intermediate routes, mm-hmm. and also on his deep ball. Like I said earlier, he's got a pretty deep ball. He does a great job of leading the receiver, you know, not making him stop for the ball, keeping him in his route, and, you know, hitting him in stride. Intermediate balls are more the 15 to 20 to 25 range, where he again, you know, think slants, think out routes, think you know, think dig routes, where he hits the receiver in stride as he's making his cut and coming out of his stem, out of his break. So I think he's really, really excelled at that. I also like the way he set up the screen passes as well last year. You know, namely like when he was getting Tariq Cohen some of the ball behind the line of scrimmage, allowing him to go and do some damage, you know, make some moves and create yards after the catch there. So there isn't really a throw that concerns me about Trubisky. I think he can make, like I said, make all the NFL throws. His completion percentage, his accuracy, I think it's going to only get better as he gets more comfortable, more familiar with the offense. The only thing I have concerns about is his decision making in the pocket, meaning there's times where he threw into double and triple coverage. Again, a lot of times that can be go back again to the type of receiving options he had there. Guys weren't really getting open, and he, you know, time was running out, so you have to get rid of the ball. But you know, a play that sticks out to me that kind of is concerning, and again, it was a throwaway game, last game of the season, but that game against the Vikings last year, the last game of the season, where I think he was rushed and he got kind of flustered and he just kind of like flicked the ball out, and I believe it was called a fumble or it was a turnover for the Bears. So for a guy who's making his 12th start, again, last game of the season, that was a play that he shouldn't be making. Those kind of mistakes he shouldn't be making at that time of, you know, that time of the year. So again, so his pocket presence is something that he needs to get better at, work at. His decision making in the pocket also needs to get better. But again, those are all things I expect him to grow at, get better at, and, you know, and improve basically.
And one of the things that he gets high marks on is being a student of the game, and that's going to help his decision making, correct?
Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing, you know, coming out is you know, 13 starts, you know, what type of leader was he? You know, could he process a full NFL, playbook? And in terms of all the reports that are coming out now, you know, obviously, you know, teammates love him. It appears he's, you know, he's committed. He's, you know, times we've seen that, you know, reports come out that he's like the first guy in the building and last guy to leave. And I know that's something that sounds like a cliche, but for the quarterback position, that is vital to have a guy who is dedicated and committed to being that, you know, that first guy in, last guy out. And mainly because, you know, he's got to learn the whole offense, right? So not only does he have to learn his responsibilities, but he has to learn every single guy in the offense what he needs to do on every particular play. So, you know, that is vital for him to, you know, pick up that, you know, because, you know, if he's pre-snap, if he sees the defense shift or he sees the defense call an audible, he has to be able to pick that up. He has to be able to say, all right, is my protection lined up correctly for this type of blitz, for example? You know, these guys just shifted out of here. Could they be bringing pressure from the secondary? So he's got to be able to know, my blocker set up correctly? Because if then he has to then alter his blocking scheme, or might even have to motion some receivers in, or, you know, if a tight end's motion down, maybe I have to bring him in to provide, you know, protection for him. So he's got to learn, know all that. He's got to know what every guy in offense is job is in every single play. And then he also has to read the defense to know if the play that's called, the protection that's called, is going to actually work. So it's very important for a guy to be committed to his trait to learn all this, because, you know, if a guy, you know, like Jamarcus Russell, you know, Johnny Manziel, those big busts, those were guys that weren't, you know, all reports were, those guys weren't committed to being that into their book, you know, the playbook, learning all the intricacies of calling audibles, of reading defensive coverages, so on and so forth. So it's very vital. So all reports are positive. Obviously, you know, the proof will be in the pudding. We'll see how he develops. But this kid, from what you could tell, he's, you know, he even on some last year, we saw some sideline shots that, you know, he'd come in, he'd encourage his offensive linemen. You know, he'd go there, every single one of them, you know, give him a little fist bump. Say, all right, we got him next time. We got him next play. So things like that, mm-hmm. Which some people might think, oh, that's just, you know, dressing or whatever. But that's important to a football team, especially from that position. That's why the quarterback position, that's why they get paid $20 to $30 million a year. Hmm. That position is the most important position on the football field. So having a guy who's committed, who's a leader, who's willing to learn and put in the extra time, you know, teammates see that and teammates feed off of that. Teammates want to play for him. So that is very important.
Yeah, there's always a divide between the offense and a defense. But a quarterback who is a great leader, his leadership spills over into the defense too. Really, right. The defensive players will see this guy being a great leader, and it just all of a sudden it becomes infectious.
Oh yeah, I mean you see times where, you know, a quarterback, you know, a great quarterback, you know, Drew Brees, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, those guys get hit a lot. The defenders, they want to get back on the field so they can hit the opposing quarterback just as hard, because hey, you take it out on my quarterback, I'm going to take it out on your quarterback. So, you know, the great quarterbacks, you know, you see the defense, you know, not only are they leaders of the offense, right, but the defenders also look up to them. They also follow their lead. They also kind of, you know, feed off of their play, their energy. So yeah, it's very important. And from what we've heard from, you know, guys like Akeem Hicks and you know, Kyle Fuller and other guys, you know, they're all buying into Trubisky, right? They're all believing what he's selling. So that's a very good sign for a kid, you know, entering his second year.
Definitely. Okay, based on your tape study of Trubisky at North Carolina and with his games with the Chicago Bears, how do you rank his field vision, his ability to find that secondary, and in some instances that third receiver?
Coming out of North Carolina, that was an area where I saw some issues with him, where there was times where he would lock in to his primary target. I call it bird dogging. Basically, you know, he would just stare at the one guy, wait for that guy to get open. And a lot of times what happens is safeties would read his eyes, and he would just allow them to flow to the ball by just looking and reading his eyes. So there are times where he would miss the underneath guy or a guy on the opposite side of the field. But there's also times where they had him only reading half of the field. They wouldn't have him doing any sort of full field, you know, left to right, reads and so on and so forth. So there were times I caught that on tape. But again, I just threw that to inexperience and the type of offense he was running at. Last year I did catch times where he would zero in or hone in on a receiver, but there's also times where you saw him go through a full field progression. He would go from option one to two to three, and then even check it down to a back or a tight end out in the flat. So again, work in progress. Things that he's going to get better at. I expect this is something that's going to be drilled into his head with this new offensive staff. Making sure that he's going through his proper checks. He's making full field reads, and he's not just honing in and having safeties read his eyes and leading them basically to where the ball is going to be thrown at.
Those times where he held the ball too long, do you attribute that perhaps to, this is what I attributed it, and this is just speculation on my part, but John Fox was just so conservative and so adamant about not turning over the ball that I think they kind of squeezed his testicles a little too hard and made him a little too worrisome about turning over the ball, which is why he would leave the pocket a little earlier in some instances. He would hold on to the ball too long and take the sack. Do you see that the same way I did?
I saw it more as he didn't have guys on the outside that could just get open. Mm-hmm. He was times he would hold on to the ball waiting for a guy to get open, to stem away from the defender. But he just, they just weren't that good to be able to do that. So and then eventually, as the offensive line kind of got injured, he took some big hits, and I think that eventually that sped up his play clock and got a little bit jittery, towards the end there. But I think that that was just a product of the offense that was around him.
Mm-hmm.
Not trying to make an excuse for him or not, but again, this is a kid that I keep harping to the experience. College experience, Bill might say it's only, it's 13 starts, but the big deal. It is a big deal. Deshaun Watson, who was my top-rated quarterback coming into last year's draft, had over 30 starts, and plus two major, bowl games against Alabama, which is basically an NFL type of defense. So he had seen some of those coverages. He had seen some of those blitzes, so he was more prepared for that, and he played. Deshaun Watson last year played with, DeAndre Hopkins. He had Lamar Miller in the backfield. He had talent around him on the offensive side of the ball. Trubisky, besides Jordan Howard and occasional, ball here or there to Tariq Cohen, he really didn't have much to work with, towards the, middle to, tail end of the mm-hmm. season. So his number one receiver was Dontrell Inman, who, is probably a third or fourth best receiver on an NFL team who's still out there as an unsigned free agent currently. So, that tells you what kind of talent they had around him. So I there was some indecisiveness. There might have been something where, it's been drilled to him, hey, don't turn the ball over. Just do not turn the ball over. But also, I think a lot of it had to do with just the talent around him. And he just was waiting for somebody to get open. I just, those guys couldn't create separation.
Fair enough. Okay. Now, his mobility, clearly he's not a Lamar Jackson or a Michael Vick, but in terms of mobility, I'm very impressed with what the guy can do and escaping the pass rush and getting downfield and picking up yards. So you would grade him highly with mobility, correct?
Yeah, that was one of his big positives that I had jotted down on my notes was, he's a good athlete with quick feet. He's got that mobility where he can escape a collapsing pocket and create plays and gain yards with his feet. We saw it a couple of times. Right? We saw big gainers against New Orleans. We saw the big gainer against Detroit where he set them up in a field goal position where they can, make kick would have won him the game. So, we see that. We see his ability to get out of the pocket, to extend plays, to, roll out and even make throws downfield. The key about with quarterbacks is if they're mobile, right? So Lamar Jackson, for example, is a key guy here we can kind of hone in on here. When he escapes the pocket, 97% of the time he's tucking the ball and he's running, mm-hmm. right? He's not looking downfield. When Trubisky escapes the pocket, he's looking downfield. He's looking downfield for a receiver. He's trying to make a play with his arm first. And if he sees nothing or if he's not comfortable with what he sees, then he tucks in and runs. And the other thing what I noticed about Trubisky is his play strength. You know, he's only 6'2", 20 to 22 pounds, but he's got that thickness about him. So when he'd get out of the pocket, you know, when he'd go downfield, start running, you know, he's looking to lower his shoulder and take on a defender. And also his ability to break arm tackles or, you know, that would lead to sacks or tackles for loss. He's able to get away from those guys and break free and then look downfield and, like I said, create a play either with his feet or with his arm. So one of the big positives, and I think that's one thing that might have drawn, you know, Ryan Pace to him was his ability, his athleticism, you know, his ability to create extra yards with his feet along with his arm. So it's key in today's NFL, you know, with the RPO being so huge right now, moving pockets being big right now, a lot of deception, a lot of shifts, you know, going here and there. So having a kid who's athletic, who's got a, you know, good arm strength and also quick feet and the ability to break arm tackles is pretty impressive for a quarterback.
Excellent. You know, it's funny. The next thing on the checklist here was set up quickness, the drop back speed going from the 3 to 5 to 7-step drops. And I got to tell you a quick story. When I was much younger, I used to coach a flag football team. Because I couldn't play, they told me, you're going to be the coach. So in typical Aldo fashion, I went to the library and picked up some books, and I found the Bill Walsh coaching book on the 3-5-7-step drop back. I actually bought a copy of his coaching book. And I learned that it's important for the quarterback to get back there quickly. And one of the things I worked with my flag football quarterback was on speeding up his drops and going, you know, doing that 3-step drop and doing it as quickly as possible, setting up and releasing the ball on time. The 5 and the 7 stop, the same thing. You don't want to get back there, set up, and have nowhere to throw because that's a good way to get sacked. And we didn't have a very good offensive line. So, back to Trubisky, how is his setup in terms of taking that 3-5-7 step drop? Does he do it quickly enough for your taste?
Oh yeah, yeah. He's got the well. Take it back. He does it quickly enough. Now, are his feet always in the proper position? No. I mean, there are times where you can see some of his throws where his feet are off balance, or he's opened up too wide, and some of the ball might sail on him a little bit. But that's footwork. That's coachable. That's something that they're going to work on with him. You know, basically when you go back to these 3-5-7 step drops, the quarterback, once he gets the ball, you know, 1, 2, by the time his third step and his back foot is planted, that ball has got to go. So he's got to be able to, with those first two steps, be able to read the defense quickly, know where his first, second, third options are, and be able to get rid of the ball on that third step, on that fifth step, on the seventh step. So that's why usually 3-step drops are quick hitting plays, slants, out routes, so on and so forth. 5 and 7-step drops are more plays where receivers are giving enough time to get downfield and get open. And those are more like the longer routes, the longer pass plays. So again, it's all foot mechanics, stuff that he wasn't 100% on coming out of college and even last year. There's times where he'd throw off his back foot. He wouldn't follow through in his throwing motion, meaning going all the way through, creating, you know, generating torque and getting, you know, getting a tight spin on the ball. So all things that he can work on, and he's going to be able to speed up in terms of getting it patterned down and getting it down to perfection. Mm-hmm. But you know, once that quarterback has that in his head, that becomes second nature to him. You know, 1, 2, 3, boom, ball is gone. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, boom, ball is gone. So, you know, that's something that he develops. He's going to get better at as he you know, continues to progress and continues to get coached up.
Excellent. And ball handling wasn't an issue at all. I mean, we saw those bad snaps from Cody White here, but that, of course, was not on Trubisky. But in terms of him handling snaps under center from the shotgun position and his exchange with running backs, all high grades, correct?
He at college, he didn't have that many many drops. He did have a couple. I also put ball handling also when he's sacked. Does he lose the ball? That's very important. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to hold on to the ball when you get hit, especially when you get hit from the blind side. You get nailed in the back. You got to be able to hold on to that ball. Turnovers are killer. So in terms of college, I saw a couple times where he got popped pretty good and the ball did come out. But, you know, overall, I don't think it was an issue coming out. Last year, there were, of course, you know, there were those bad snaps in training camp, and then there were some exchange. I think it was one against Atlanta in the opening game where there was a handoff issue with him and Jordan Howard, and the ball scored free, and I believe Atlanta picked it up and might have even scored on that play. So early on, there were some issues with him, you know, dropping the snaps and possibly, you know, fumbling at the mesh point with the running back. But as the season progressed, I think he cleaned that up pretty well. And I don't recall anything off the top of my head later on in the season where he had issues with the snap or anything like that.
Cool. All right. The last few things they've got on the checklist here, we've really covered leadership, football intelligence, and so forth. But there is one that I want to tackle here, and that is game management. And the author here writes, how well does he control the whole game situation? Is he instinctive, and does he play under control? I think those are good questions. What do you think?
The one thing I liked about Trubisky coming out was he never saw him get rattled, right? A lot of young quarterbacks, when they are pressured, especially when they don't have that much experience, that, you know, they tend to get rattled, especially on, you know, at the opponent's home field. You know, those college stadiums are pretty loud, and the fans can get on you there. So, you know, I never saw him get rattled. It never showed like he was nervous or he had fear in his eyes, or that they like to call that the deer in the headlights look. Mm-hmm. I never saw that from him. And even last year, right, you know, his first start was against the Vikings, you know, division opponent, you know, a highly rated team with a very good defense on Monday Night Football. And he didn't seem to be rattled or nervous or anything like that. Did he have the greatest game ever? No, he didn't have the greatest game ever. But again, you just saw a calmness about him, which is, again, another key component of being a good quarterback, is to be calm, because you're the leader of that team. You're the leader of the offense. You got to be calm when the pressure's on. Under 2 minutes left, you're down by a score. You're, you know, at your own 5-yard line. You got to, you know, drive this team 95 yards. You got to be the calming presence, you know, to, you know, the guys in the huddle who might be nervous, who might be looking around like, oh my God, what are we gonna do here? So I did not see anything like that. I didn't see nerves take over or anything like that. I saw a nice calm demeanor in terms of managing the game. I mean, I think you mentioned earlier, I think a lot of times last year he was handcuffed by the types of play calls he was given. I mean, he had one game where he threw the ball 7 times. So it all kind of works hand in hand with what he was being asked to do last year. So in terms of a game manager, you know, a lot of times people hear the term game manager and they think it's a bad narrative or a bad name to give to a quarterback. But I think a game manager is a guy who knows the situation, who knows that, hey, it's 3rd and 15. Instead of trying to, you know, make a play here on my 25-yard line and possibly throw it into triple coverage, you know, I'll take the 10-yard check down. We'll punt the ball. We'll live to play another down or another series, and let's give our defense a chance to get the ball back for us. So, you know, a guy who's smart, who knows when to risk it, when to dump it off, when to actually go for it, I think that's a guy who's a game manager. Nowadays, everything's all game managers, just a guy who hands the ball off. Doesn't really try to, you know, threaten the defense downfield. No, that's not how I see it. I see the guy who can actually manage the game. You know, Peyton Manning was a great game manager. Peyton Manning knew every you know down and distance. He knew the time of the game, when it was time to press the defense, when it was time to, you know, possibly check down. Let's go ahead and try to, like I said earlier, you know, punt the ball and live for another down. So I think it's, in terms of Trubisky, again, this training camp, this season is going to be very, very interesting to see how he's coached up, how he forms that game managing experience. How is he becoming to a game manager? A lot of times this year or this upcoming season, you're going to see him running a fast, no huddle offense. You know, that's going to be him possibly calling plays unless Nagy gets it into him, you know, in his headset. But a lot of times when he's fast, up tempo. Games, you know, or offense starts rolling, you're going to see him calling plays on the fly. You're going to see him there managing the game. You're going to see him there, you know, calling plays, getting guys in position to, you know, to proceed down the field. So very, very important developmental season for him this year. And I'll have to see how he's going to grow from the beginning of training camp towards the tail end of the season.
You know, the only game that I would say that I saw him a bit rattled was the game on the road that I went to in Detroit, that Lions game. It just seemed that he started to press there a bit in the fourth quarter because things weren't going well the entire game, and it led to a couple of interceptions late in the game. It was an unfortunate performance. I don't know if you can attribute it to being rattled. It just seemed like, you know, he wasn't himself that game. And despite that, you know, there were still a lot of, if you look at that tape of that game, there were still a lot of things to be grateful for in terms of his performance. There were things that he did correctly, but that was the one game that at the end of the game, I would say from a game management standpoint, was not his best performance.
Yeah, that was a 3-interception game he had.
Right.
And that was probably his worst game of the season. But again, I don't know. I guess I have to go back and look at that tape, but I don't know if I saw him trying to make plays. I saw a kid who was frustrated with what was happening and said, you know what, I'm gonna throw it in there. I'm going to make a play here. And I think it just backfired on him. Again, he didn't have the type of receivers that could, you know, go up and get the ball. If he threw it up in back shoulder or something like that, he had to actually be a, you know, pinpoint perfect trying to get it. I remember that the one interception he threw at Dontrell Inman, who was in the end zone, he tried to throw it between three guys. Mm-hmm. And it was picked off. So that's not stuff that we saw from him typically throughout the season. That's not stuff that I saw from him in college. So I thought it was more of a frustration. It was like, you know, I'm going to go out here, I'm going to make a play. Could it have been rattled? Sure. I mean, but I think, you know, maybe because of it's just his calm demeanor, you don't really see that in him. You know, you only see him, kind of look lost, you know, if you will. I think in that game, I just saw him, a kid who was trying just to make a play for his team, who was down, he was just frustrated. But we'll see how he develops this season.
Okay, so let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. Who is Mitch Trubisky? Who can he potentially be like? Andy Benoit over at SI.com wrote a column about Trubisky called The Keys to Trubisky's Potential, and he compared him to potentially being a better version of Kirk Cousins. Do you agree with that?
Oh, man, Kirk Cousins, that's a low bar for me.
I knew you were going to say that.
If he can be, are you looking for an NFL comparison or who do I think he'll develop into? I mean,
yeah, either one of those. Do you think that, he's more of an Alex Smith? Can he potentially be an Aaron Rodgers? You know, I think, you know, somewhere in between there, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good in-between spot. I think if his floor is Alex Smith, and obviously if his ceiling is Aaron Rodgers, I mean, you're looking at a pretty damn good quarterback here.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Trubisky that intrigues me, and we've discussed this before, Aldo, you and I have, is again, his athleticism, his accuracy, his ability to make all the NFL throws. You love seeing that. You love seeing the off the field, the football character. You love seeing all that stuff. Going back to what I said earlier, my main concern, what has me somewhat concerned a little bit, is his decision-making in the pocket. And, you know, again, we have to kind of take it back, right, and say, all right, you know, was it because of the receivers he was playing with, or was it because of just this is how it is or how he processes the game? But I just saw him make some questionable throws at times. I saw him throw the ball into, like we were just talking about the Detroit game, into triple coverage when you're in your red zone. I saw him try and, you know, force the ball into a receiver who was not open, you know, on a deep route, and again to double coverage. So, but however, when he rolled out, when he's moving his launch point, you know, he made better decisions, in my opinion. He showed better accuracy. He showed an ability to make plays on the run as well. So, I've heard comparisons, you know, people compare Trubisky to Andy Dalton, to, like you said, Kirk Cousins, to, you know, Alex Smith. I mean, I don't want to sound like, you know, a homer or anything like that, but I don't think he's going to be as great as Aaron Rodgers, but I think he's got the same kind of qualities of Aaron Rodgers, and meaning that he doesn't have the arm strength of Aaron Rodgers, but he's got a pretty good arm. He's got the quick release. He's got the athleticism. He's got the ability to move the pocket and create plays with his feet, and he's got that calm, cool demeanor, I believe, that he could develop into that type of a quarterback, a guy who can be a leader on offense. So I don't want to say Aaron Rodgers, because that's just a bar that's too high to set. You know, so I want to, like I said earlier, an in-between Alex Smith and Aaron Rodgers, I think would be a good area to hopefully have him achieve that type of quarterback.
You know, I agree totally with you there. I don't think we should be shy about making that comparison to Aaron Rodgers, because there are some qualities in Mitch Trubisky that remind me a lot of Aaron Rodgers. Now, we also have to look at the context. You know, Aaron Rodgers really benefited from those 2 years on the bench behind Brett Favre. He really benefited from playing more games at the college level. He really benefited from having a coaching staff that was much better at developing quarterbacks, you know, and so he had good teachers in the quarterback room as a pro. So he had all those things going. So, you know, when you compare that with what Mitch Trubisky has had, the limited college football experience as a starter, the coaching staff with the Chicago Bears and so forth, then, you know, he's been at he's had that handicap. Now we're seeing him being handed offensive weapons. We're seeing him being handed it's huge. I think that Dave Ragone is back for the second year as a quarterback coach, because he's going to continue to have that camaraderie with him, that rapport, correct. And then you've got guys, you know, these great offensive minds, Helfrich and Nagy, coming up with schemes to get receivers open for him. And I'm not saying he's Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
You know, you definitely got it corrected. The arm strength is a totally different thing. They're two totally different quarterbacks there. But escapability, obsession to be the best, there are some similar qualities there.
Right. And a couple of things that – all things you point about Aaron Rodgers and his – and one of the reasons – or a couple of the reasons why he had success. But also remember – Aaron Rodgers has been in the same offense since he came into the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
This is Trubisky's second season; is already in his second offense, so that's a whole different learning curve.
Yep.
You know, Rodgers had, you know, Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson. He's got, you know, talented tight ends to throw to. You know, he's got, you know, decent offensive line. Not so much, you know, recently in recent years, but, you know, he had decent offensive lines, you know, to protect for him. So. But the key thing was he was in the same offensive system since he first entered the NFL. So, you know, and he just continued to grow into that system. You know, Nagy has said, you know, repeatedly that in order for a quarterback to be fully comfortable in his system, it's going to take about 3 to 5 years, right, to be able to fully grasp the system, to be able to know it like the back of your hand. So, you know, Trubisky is going to be constantly learning new things and constantly learning new concepts, new ways, new formations, new ways to take advantage of defense, to take advantage of certain coverages, take advantage of certain defensive shifts, audibles, so on and so forth. So, again, I don't want to say, you know, Aaron Rodgers, but, you know, the ability to throw the ball on the spot, you know, with Aaron Rodgers, I think he might be the best back shoulder passer in the NFL. You know, he puts it on a spot where only his receiver can get to it. I've seen Trubisky make those type of throws. Has it been in a smaller sample size? Sure, it has been. You know, has it been as consistent as Aaron Rodgers? No, it has not. But he's only had 12 NFL starts, you know, so something that the little sample size that he gives us is impressive. And I think that's why a lot of Bears fans, a lot of actually national media are very encouraged and high on the Bears because of the little sample glimpses that Trubisky has shown us that, you know, he can be an efficient and really above average, you know, NFL quarterback. So, you know, again, is there development that needs to be done? Sure. Does he need to be coached up? Sure. But, you know, he's got those things that you can kind of hang your hat on and say, all right, I see you here. I see what Ryan Pace saw, you know. So the only thing we do is just kind of sit back and watch him develop in front of our eyes. So, you know, again, that's why, you know, Nagy brought in, you know, the offensive staff he brought in to try and help develop this quarterback into someone that he's going to be able to succeed in his offense. And one of the things we're going to see or going to notice right away, I think, in this offense is you'll see a lot of those three-step drops. You'll see Trubisky getting rid of the ball quickly and into the hands of playmakers like Tariq Cohen, you know, Taylor Gabriel, you know, Trey Byrne, you know, just get the ball out of his hands quickly. Get the ball, get a completion, you know, build up some momentum, get his confidence going, and then soon, once he's mastered getting the ball out quickly, then we're going to see them set up the play downfield, you know, for a jump off of Allen Robinson. You know, maybe, you know, Shaheen can go up there and catch a, you know, a 50-50 ball, you know, in the middle of the field. So we're gonna see that. We're gonna see that develop slowly but surely. But initially, you're gonna see a lot of slip screens, a lot of bubble screens, you know, getting the ball quickly out of his hands, trying to get that confidence going, trying to get him, you know, seeing the ball completed and so on and so forth, getting momentum going. I think that's how you're gonna build it up. Now, of course, you also have a running game that you're also gonna probably lean on heavily as well. So it's the way they develop, the way they coach him up is gonna be very interesting to watch over the next coming months. So that's why, you know, this is the one training camp that I'm can't wait to get down there and watch, see how the practices go, see how he looks with the first string unit, see the preseason games out. We probably won't see him in the first game, probably maybe in the second, you know, of your third and fourth game, we'll see him more. But see how he develops that cohesiveness, see that the rapport with his receiver. So definitely looking forward to this upcoming season.
Last couple of questions here with Danny Shimon, who you can find at Twitter at DSHIMON 56, at DSHIMON 56. What's the 56 for, Danny?
Oh, that's my number. When I played football, it was my number. Now I played softball, that was my number.
Very cool.
And then I'm a Sox fan, so my favorite all-time White Sox pitcher is Mark Brody, so he wore 56 as well. So
excellent. Very cool. Yeah. All right. Give me an evaluation of how Ryan Pace did in surrounding Trubisky with the necessary weapons that Trubisky will need to succeed. The reason I ask you this question is because you were a little surprised about the Allen Robinson signing, correct?
I was. And the reason I was surprised about it, Allen Robinson really only has had one great season. You know, I mean, it was a 2014 season where he had over 1,000 yards and I believe it was 8 to 9 touchdowns. So, and then, you know, the following season, it was a subpar season. And then, of course, last year he got hurt. So, you know, I understand the excitement over the Allen Robinson signing. I'm just holding out some reservations. It's like, you know, this kid, this guy, you know, hasn't really, to me, proven he's a number one starting receiver in the NFL. So in terms of what Ryan Pace has done, I like his move so far. Obviously, you know, if Robinson is healthy 100% with that knee, he gives you a big body receiver, a guy who can go up and get those, you know, contested 50-50 balls, those jump balls, who'll present a nice target in the red zone. And in terms of the wide, you know, the tight end, Trey Byrne, we've already discussed this many times, you know, it's called the U tight end in this offense. He's going to be a move tight end, a guy who's going to be lined up in the slot, in the backfield as an H-back, as a receiver sometimes, even in line as a blocker. So he's going to be another weapon that he's going to be able to get the ball to. And then we have, you know, Taylor Gabriel. And of course, my favorite addition was the rookie, Anthony Miller, because I think this kid has a chance to be a darn good NFL receiver. So the speed that Gabriel and Miller will provide on offense is going to be key. I look to have Tariq Cohen involved heavily in this offense. I think you're going to see Tariq Cohen line up at multiple positions, whether it's receiver, as a slot receiver, as a running back. I mean, he's going to be all over the place, I think, you know. So I still would like to see a little bit more speed on offense. I know Gabriel and Cohen and Miller provide that, but I still want to see another playmaker. Of course, in a perfect world, Kevin White would be that playmaker. You know, coming out of West Virginia, he was timed at a 4.38 40, but he never played at a 4.3 40 at West Virginia. So I think that was more training and him being able to prep for the combine. And he ran a 4.38 40. I think Kevin White's more of a high 4.4, 4.5 guy. Still pretty fast, but you know, not a 4.38 guy. So you know, if Kevin White can stay healthy and develop and show another option, another release valve, you know, on the opposite side of Allen Robinson, I think that's gonna you know, obviously enhance the offense. So again, you know, these are all new parts, right? They all have to gel. They all have to get cohesive. So just, you know, warning Bears fans, you know, if this offense doesn't look too good and, you know, in the preseason or it struggles in week one or week two, don't worry. You know, it's going to take time for them to develop that as a unit and develop that cohesiveness to be able to go out there and score points. So, you know, towards the middle of the season, you're going to see them get better. And then by the end of next season, they should be kicking on all cylinders. So, but if I had to say one, for the nitpicky, I would like to get one more speed receiver opposite of Allen Robinson.
Danny, you sound greedy. Another speed receiver.
What kills in the NFL is speed, mm-hmm. right? If you have speed, you guys, defensive coordinators and defensive, players are cognizant of. They got to know where they're at. When Teal Gabriel and Tariq Cohen are both on the field, that's going to present a problem. That's going to present guys that defenders are going to be, hey, where are these guys lined up? Where are they going? What kind of routes are they running? So on and so forth. And that'll give the guys like Trey Burton and Adam Shaheen and other guys the ability to get open against one-on-one coverage most likely, or maybe possibly even zone coverage and get open and make a big play. So, but if you had another receiver, it's easier said than done, but if you had a Julio Jones, for example, a guy who combines speed and size, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That'd be ideal, right? That would be something that you would have a guy that, okay, you got this guy, this beast here who runs a 4.4, 4.3, 40, who's, 6.3 and can go up and get the ball. But then you have guys like Teal Gabriel and Tariq Cohen and other, Anthony Miller and these guys flying around the field underneath coverage. That's when I think the offense will be high octane, full pedal to the metal. They're going to be scoring a lot of points. So, again, am I being picky? Yes, I am. But if you ask me, like, is there anything that they're lacking? Just one more speed receiver is what I really wanted to see on this team. So, but is it an upgrade from last year? By all means, a big time upgrade over last year. So,
well, and what you're saying is, you're really pointing out a picture of wouldn't it be great if Kevin White lived up to expectations? Because that player, that 6'3" fast player, is Kevin White at his potential best? He could be that player. And the fact that Allen Robinson was his rehabilitation, kept him off the field for these OTAs. It allowed Kevin White to practice more with Trubisky. Trubisky had some really positive words to say about White's performance in these OTAs. It's not beyond the realm of possibility that this guy could actually develop into a player. I'm not saying Julio Jones, to use your example, but he could be that guy who will give us 60 receptions, and 20% of those are explosive plays of 20 yards or more downfield. Quite possible. Do you agree?
Yeah, with Kevin White, anything that you get out of him right now, for me, is gravy, is extra, right? Because so you can't go into a season expecting anything from Kevin White. But if he does turn into, like you just said, a guy who gives you 60 receptions, for, 800 plus yards, even possibly more, 6-7 touchdowns, that's a positive. That's a guy, a solid number two, that you can have opposite of Allen Robinson. So, Allen Robinson is the Allen Robinson of 2014. And the number one receiver that the Bears are paying him to be. So, but to expect Kevin White to be a difference-making receiver right now, I think is going to be hard to swallow, really. Because, even when he was playing, Kevin White wasn't comfortable. Kevin White as a Bear wasn't comfortable. Mm-hmm. You always saw him a tad bit slow than what you expected to see him. And this is my opinion, but I think he had trouble processing the offense. I think he had trouble. Remember, he ran a limited route tree at West Virginia, mm-hmm. right? He had like two or three routes he ran, and that was it. Running an NFL route tree, being able to run a route based on what you see, what you're recognizing the coverage, doing or a route dictated by coverage, is not easy to do, especially if you're not having been trained for it. He was really a one-year wonder at West Virginia, right. And he came out after his junior year. So he hasn't developed that part of his game. And when you saw him play, you saw him think. It's like he was thinking more than just reacting. And what I wanted him to see or want to do is just play. Just, don't worry about injuries. Don't worry about thinking it. Learn the offense. You're a third-year receiver. Yeah, you don't have the experience of a third-year receiver because you haven't played that much, but you should be able to pick up defensive coverages. You should be able to do a site adjustment and be in sync with your quarterback and get yourself open and make plays downfield. So that's what I would love to see from Kevin White. But I mean, anything, I can't expect that from him right now, because, you know, every time you expect him to have a good season, he has a freak injury and, you know, he's off for the year. So anything he gives us will be gravy. But, you know, he never played to that speed, that explosiveness that I anticipated when he came out of college, and that made him the seventh pick in the draft. So will he get that back? It's a whole new offense. Again, this offense is going to be predicated on him, you know, being in sync with the quarterback, being able to, like I said earlier, do a side adjustment, you know, adjust his route, depending on what the coverage is doing, what the defenders are trying to do to him. So him and Trubisky got to be on the same length, you know. So he's off to a good start. He's going through OTAs. Him and Mitch are gelling right now, and hopefully that continues throughout training camp, into the preseason, and obviously into the regular season. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed for Kevin White, and hopefully he develops into the receiver that Bears have or wanted. But at this point, I just can't expect that to happen.
His name is Danny Shimon. You find him on Twitter at DSHIMON56. Danny, it has been a joy talking football. And to be honest with you, I could go another 2-3 hours. Oh, I really could.
Anytime it comes on, break down plays, break down players, break down schemes. I love it. I can go on and on. I just won't shut up.
One of these days, we've been talking here at the bar room. One of these days, we wanted to do like go on MixLR.com, our live radio channel, and just do a full day long of football talk. Maybe we should do that over the summer. You can come on, talk football for 2-3 hours. Shane, Phil, come on, talk for 2-3 hours. We total all up, and by the end of the broadcast day, we've got 10 hours of football talk. That would be pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. That'll be a long day.
That would be a long day. We've also talked about doing shows in the naked and drunk and so forth. So we got tons of ideas here at Bears Bar.
That's the adult content that I don't think I'm invited to.
That's right. You're not old enough, Danny. We haven't seen your IDs.
Again, I just want to say I'm excited and pumped to be part of the team. Thank you to you, Aldo, to the rest of the team, to, you know, allow me to come in and be a part. I just hope to be able to contribute wherever you guys need me. And, you know, looking forward to another great football season, hopefully. How about that prediction, 4-12, I saw? Someone was predicting the Bears going to go 4-12 this year?
Yeah, some writer over at, I think it was SI.com, predicted that. You have to believe, like I think all Bears fans do, that that's just a ridiculous prediction, right?
I mean, I didn't see the article, but I just kind of saw something being, you know, set up on Twitter. But what was his – did you read the article? What was his basis off of?
I skimmed through it. I think it was Shane that said that the writer mentioned that the defense needed to make some improvements. And this is a defense that was fifth in ranked – in the top five, were they? No, or top 10.
Top 10.
I'm sorry. Top 10. And that Trubisky still hasn't proven anything and so forth. You know, really, what it appeared to be was a national football writer who really had not studied the Chicago Bears and was doing predictions for all 32 teams. And the prediction he made for the Bears was based on faulty knowledge, which is why we have Bears Barroom here, because we've got guys like Danny, like Shane, like Phil, and like so many of the other people who appear on Bears Barroom, Buffon and our writers. They study the Chicago Bears. They live and breathe the Bears. And while we're not over at Hallis Hall hanging around getting insider information, that's fine. We're looking at tape. We're reading articles. We're collecting tons of information, and we're giving you informed opinion and analysis. This writer who did this and predicted 4 wins, it was clear that he was not well informed on the Bears.
4 wins? I mean, last year they were 5-11. And they could have had 2 extra wins if they had a competent kicker, mm-hmm. you know, and for the whole season. So, you know, they could have easily gone 7-9 last year, if not 8-8, with some luck here and there. But, wow, that's a head scratcher. 4-12, huh? Yeah. Maybe he was just kind of you know, Trubisky's in a second year. You know, he hasn't really proven he's, you know, anything yet, although we're all excited about him. And maybe because of the division, it's a pretty stacked division. Maybe that's why he was kind of basing off of that. Interesting. Maybe I have to check out that article and see his reasoning why 4-12.
Well, and here's another reason why they'll probably win more than four games, very likely. There's an Detroit. All the football fans in Detroit are all going nuts right now because there was an article written in the Detroit Free Press by Carlos Manares, I think you pronounce his last name, longtime beat writer for covering the Lions. And he says that Patrice is already in danger of losing the team because he's punishing them during OTAs with running laps when they do something wrong. And that's old, ineffective football coaching, in my opinion. You've got veterans being punished like they're varsity football players at high school. You're taking away valuable time. You have such limited time during OTAs, off-season practices, and you're wasting time and having them run laps. You've got young players who need every snap possible to show that they need a spot on the team, and they're running laps. That's just utterly stupid and ridiculous. This Matt Patrice, who already comes in with controversy because he did not divulge to the Detroit Lions that he had a sexual assault allegation about him many years ago. It was later dropped, and so perhaps it was nothing. But you need to kind of tell your employer, yeah, by the way, this happened, there was nothing to it, blah, blah, blah. But the fact that he concealed it was a terrible first step. And now we're learning that as a head coach, he's treating his players like they're high school varsity players. I don't get it. That's bad. And hopefully the Bears are going to convert that rookie coach's first season into two wins.
Interesting. Well, I know a lot of coaches, when they first take over, the program, or if you will, or a team, they like to implement things like that. Remember when Lovie Smith first took over, mm-hmm. he had the Bears running these drills, these time tests, and the same thing. Every time the ball was on the ground in completion, they made sure they picked it up and they ran it back into the end zone. Mm-hmm. So they like to come in. The first year coaches like to come in and set a tempo, set an expectation for the mm-hmm. for the veterans or even the rookies. So I know what he's doing. Like even remember when John Fox came in here. Remember the Bears had this test, this fitness test that mm-hmm. that if you didn't pass it the first day of training camp, you weren't allowed to practice or something like that. So all these first year coaches, they generally do this. Now I haven't heard anything about Matt Nagy doing anything like that. I mean, I'm not saying he's not doing anything like that, but you know, to say it's that he's losing the team in OTAs, this writer, I mean, that's a little bit, I think, getting out above your skis here for a bit. I mean, all these coaches, these first year coaches, they always try and come in and do that. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, Matt Patricia is going to be a very interesting case to study over the season because, you know, a lot of guys from the Bill Belichick, coaching tree don't succeed.
That's right.
So, the one guy that gets praised as being successful is Bill O'Brien, although I don't think he's that good of a coach. I mean, he might be a good offensive coach, but, as far as a head coach, I think he's pretty average, mm-hmm. We'll see how that Patricia thing handles plays out in Detroit. So, I like the fact that he's rocket in here, looks like he's a smart guy. So he might be knowing what he's doing. I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the word with Nagy is that he came in and he set some clubhouse rules and some decorum, for lack of a better word, rules that the players didn't have anything negative to say. They didn't have anything positive to say. It's things like having your shirt tucked in, little things like that. But for the most part, what he's done in terms of setting his culture up has been in a positive fashion. He's told the players, be you. That's the model of the team. And that's right. Embracing who they are as individuals and not worry about their silent players, introverted players, and embrace right. the fact that you're that type of player, just like you embrace the fact that you're an extrovert, and the coaches will adapt to your learning styles and so forth. That, to me, is more 21st century coaching, and that the Lovie Smith, John Fox, Matt Patrice style of coaching, where you're disciplining players by wasting time of running laps, that to me just doesn't make any sense. Not with the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, making practice time so valuable now. You have such limited time with these players to see them running around the park is to me ludicrous. But
right, we'll even actually Danny Trevathan came out and said that now. They can, you know, they're allowing players to be themselves, to be able to express themselves, mm-hmm. not walk around like robots,
yep.
which is kind of surprising because, you know, Trevathan came from Denver under John Fox. So mm-hmm. that was just, you know, kind of surprising that he would say something like that. But
that was surprising.
Was surprising. So,
and this is the time of the year where, you know, everybody, all the players are saying, you know, the present situation is better than it was last year.
Right.
Whether it's a new coach or the same coach or whatever. So you got to take some of that with a grain of salt. But in just listening to Matt Nagy in the press conferences and listening to players, there is a totally different vibe. The culture has changed over at Hallis Hall. It does feel more contemporary in terms of coaching styles, culture changes, and so forth. People know I wasn't a big fan of John Fox. I thought that his old school style coaching just was not appropriate. And it finally feels right, but the proof will be in the pudding, wins and losses. And I'm really hopeful that the Lions are going to fall back because they're going to adjust to this new coach, and they still have holes in certain parts of their player personnel. The Green Bay Packers are in some bit of turmoil. Aaron Rodgers is not happy with management. There's reports that Aaron Rodgers wants more player personnel decisions. Did you hear that one?
I did not. I heard that he wants options, off options, like the LeBron options in his contract. Where yes. if he's not happy, he can opt out and become a free agent. And is you know yeah. that's what he's trying to negotiate. But you know, Grimmie's like, good luck with that.
Really,
I have not heard that he wants player personnel.
Yeah,
I know he wasn't happy with Jordy Nelson being let go.
That's correct.
He wasn't happy with that, even though they got him Jimmy Graham. But I think if you ask Aaron Rodgers, I think he'd rather have Jordy Nelson than Jimmy Graham.
Absolutely. Well, and I agree with Aaron Rodgers as the franchise quarterback and a guy who is clearly a top 2-3 quarterbacks in the NFL and a future Hall of Famer. You would think you'd pick up the phone and say, hey, listen, we're thinking about letting Jordy go, and here's why. We want you to understand what's behind our decision, and then getting his input. But for Aaron Rodgers to find out about it as the decision's made, Jordy's gone, and so forth, that's a disrespect to the most important player on your team.
That is surprising. You know, Packers are good franchise. They're well run. So for that to come out, for him to learn, I think it was via Twitter mm-hmm. that Jordy Nelson was released. You know, his very good friend and his top target. Again, how much does Nelson have left after a couple of knee injuries and some couple of down seasons? Who knows? But just the respect level of being able to, call Aaron and say, hey, we're releasing Jordy. Not that you're going to ask for his permission, because you shouldn't be asking players for their permission to release other players. But
right.
Just the courtesy as being the quarterback, the leader of the offense, the leader of the team, basically say, hey, we're doing this. We're moving on. I don't want you to hear from, through Twitter or a reporter or something like that. So that was surprising, especially coming from the Packers. So, we'll see how it goes. But, in terms of culture and all that stuff, we'll see how this Patricia story turns out. But I want to keep an eye on and see how this Belichick tree, if any coaches develop off of it as well.
Yeah, it's surprising that there hasn't been much success coming out of that tree. But with, I think the Lions, they were 9-7 last year. I think it's going to be difficult for them to get to that 9-win threshold. The Packers definitely had a bad year last season because of the Aaron Rodgers injury. But I don't see the Packers being a 10-win team in 2018 because I think there's just problems there with the culture, with the leadership. You know, there is a new general manager there, the guy that took over for Ted Thompson. And so the way that Matt Murphy, I think is his name, the guy who was
Mark Murphy.
Yeah.
Mark Murphy.
Yeah. He's got the head coach and the GM both reporting to him directly.
Right.
That's not good.
That's a weird setup.
Yeah. So I just see some problems there. Now they've, you know, you and I have talked about their draft. We're both pretty impressed by their draft. I think you maybe a little more than me. So, but I see them as potentially a 9-7 team. It's the Vikings who are coming off a 13-1 season, who have a ferocious defense. With very little turnover, if any turnover, no turnover really, in fact, of their key players on defense. If they can get their offensive line and quarterback play under control, and this running back, Dalvin Cook, comes back and plays the way he did before he hurt his ACL, that the Vikings could be another 13-win season. That's the team the Bears have to should be shooting for, the division champs, defending division champs.
Yeah, I mean, coming into the season, definitely the Vikings are the team to beat, in my opinion. But Kirk Cousins, I know he's the $30 million quarterback. He's got the guaranteed money, but I think he was just the right quarterback at the right time. I don't think he's that much of an upgrade over Case Keenum, to be honest with you. I've studied Kirk Cousins coming out of Michigan State. I studied him as a Redskin. I studied him, you know, preparing for free agency this year. He, as I mentioned to you during lunch, you know, he'll make that heartbreaking end of game last drive interception or throw that that you kind of refer to or reference that, you know, Jay Cutler would do, you know. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's gonna be a lot of pressure on him. It's gonna be a new offensive system. Again, everything's nice and shiny and pleasant now in OTAs and probably in training camp as well, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Vikings, you know, kind of fall back a little bit to the pack, if you will. Maybe not 13 wins, maybe, you know, maybe 10 or 11 or something like that. But, you know, Kirk Cousins is going to have a lot of pressure on him. And if he doesn't deliver, not that he's going to get benched anytime soon, but it's going to be a lot of pressure. And it was interesting to see how he responds to the pressure. Does he come out and just, you know, naturally just, you know, start flinging the ball all over the field and, you know, and put up points and numbers and all that stuff? Or is it now he struggles, you know, he's going to hear the boos or maybe even the chatter from the fans or the media? You know, Kirk Cousins got those big ears. You know, he hears everything people say. You know, his famous, you know, you like that rant, you know, kind of thing. You know, that was his response to criticism, right? So it'll be interesting. You know, again, the Vikings are going to be the favorite coming into the season, but I would keep an eye on that Minnesota quarterback position and see how Kirk Cousins responds. I mean, he's going to be under a lot of pressure, a lot of scrutiny, especially at the beginning of the season, especially if he gets off to a rough start. So this has a chance. NFC North has a chance to be a very, very good division, but also there's some things where you can see some teams kind of not meeting expectations, you know, like you said, with Packers. You know, I think Packers are going to be very, very good. I think their defense is going to be much better this year. With Mike Pettine as a defensive coordinator, he brings a attacking, aggressive defensive style that, you know, they didn't have the last couple of years under Dom Capers. Remember, they made a kind of an under-the-radar nice signing of Muhammad Wilkerson. You know, that guy, when he's motivated and he's right, that guy is a monster, a beast, you know, along the defensive line. So, you know, he's gonna make his presence felt, I feel, for the Packers, along with then, you know, the other defensive linemen they have there, and as well as these young cornerbacks they picked up in the draft too. So look for the Packers to be a little bit more improved on defense than what we've expected or we've seen in the last couple of seasons.
All right. It's always ridiculous. Yeah, I told you I could talk 2-3 more hours. It's always ridiculous to make predictions at this point of the season. I think that if you're going to make a prediction that's really valid and well-informed, you got to wait till after that third preseason game. But let's have a little fun. We've been talking about the division. Tell me, you know, what are your expectations? Give me worst case possibility for the Chicago Bears in 2018 and best case possibility for the Bears in 2019.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's go with worst case. Worst case, they're injury riddled, and that writer from SI is right, and they go 4-12. That's worst case scenario. When I say injury riddled, I'm talking about you losing key players on both offense and defense. Knock on wood, God forbid, you know, Trubisky and Jordan Howard or anything like that. But that's worst case scenario. I mean, but again, I'm not expecting that. Best case scenario, I think they can contend for if they get off to a good start. and it's going to be keyed by their defense. Again, I don't think they're offensively on thing. They're going to be kicking on all cylinders at the beginning of the season. I think their defense is going to have to carry them the first couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks of the season, and maybe, you know, help them guide them to games, you know, keep games close and allow them to, you know, stick a win here and there, extra, you know, made field goal or last, you know, last second score, so on and so forth. But I, you know, they continue to improve and get better. That defense is a top 10 defense like it was last year, and it continues to get better. Again, key question mark on defense, right? Pass rush. Who's going to be the pass rusher opposite Leonard Floyd? Is Leonard Floyd going to be a double-digit pass rusher? Now, I know Vic Fangio's not worried about it. I'm a little bit worried about it, though. But let's just, you know, for the sake of this conversation, let's say they have another top 10 defense. That offense is going to have to, is going to pick up and slowly but surely start to get better, hopefully by the middle of the season. And like I said earlier, by the end of the season, they're going to be kicking on all cylinders. So if you want an example of how I could see this going, is look at the San Diego Chargers of this past season. I believe they started off 0-2 or 0-4, possibly. I forgot their record, but it was pretty bad. They had, you know, they had a rookie kicker, missed a couple of, you know, kicks that could have got them victories. But then, again, new coaching staff and, you know, developing young players on defense, you know, they kind of started gelling, got better and better. And next thing you know, they're 9-7. They're one of the hottest teams at the end of the season that no one wanted to play at the end of the year. And they, I think they barely missed the playoffs. So, you know, if you see something like that developing with the Bears, it's going to get excited. Now, if the Bears go 9-7 and miss the playoffs, that's not going to be a bad thing for me, because that means that they're growing, Trubisky's developing, and they're getting better offensively and defensively, and then that's going to lead momentum into the following season. So, best case scenario, I guess, to answer your question, you know, they're 9-7, 10-6, and they make a wild card and they make the playoffs. I don't see them winning the division. Like I said, you have Minnesota, you have Green Bay up top there. You know, catching them might be a little bit hard. So best case scenario, 10-6, 9-7, to make a wild card and make the playoffs. Worst case, they're another injury-riddled team, and they go, you know, 4-12, 5-11, something like that.
I like the first part about that. 10 wins sounds good to me. No more injuries, yeah. Please.
Right, and then that's the thing. It's like, you know, you got it. I know the Bears revamped their training staff, their strength and conditioning coaches, and all that stuff. So hopefully, you know, knock on wood, those injuries are a thing of the past, and they can move on and you know, put together, you know, a healthy football squad for first time in a long time. But again, it's football. It's a full contact sport. Freak injuries happen. So, you know, I just hope and pray that everyone gets and stays healthy and everyone, you know, plays to the expected performance. And then they develop this cohesiveness and, you know, Matt Nagy, you know, gets control of that, you know, that team. And he's the leader that the Bears are looking for in a coaching position, along with Vic Fangio. And this team is going to continue to gel and build momentum and become better. You know, like I said, they're going to be better, in my opinion, towards the tail end of the season than they are going to be in the beginning of the season. You know, and that's mainly because I feel like the offense is going to take some time for them to gel and become a cohesive unit. So, but towards the end of the season, I fully expect them to be kicking on all cylinders and, you know, being a team that could possibly average, you know, 20, 25 points a game, even more. Towards the tail end of the upcoming season. So, and if that happens, if they get those couple of victories in the beginning of the year, right, those, you know, 1-2 point squeakers here and there, they get past those, they build up that momentum, they get that confidence going, then that just can kind of, you know, snowballs and rolls and rolls. And next thing you know, you have a team that's scoring points, stopping the opposing team from scoring points. You know, we hopefully have a good kicker this year. You know, we sure paid him like he's a good kicker. So, you know, we, like I said, 10-6 playoffs. That's my best case scenario.
It's a perfect way to end the show. Really appreciate your time. We've been about an hour and a half. And
that's it? I felt like 20 minutes. That's it.
That's exactly. That's what makes it a good interview when time flies. Danny Shinman, again, welcome to the Bears Barroom. And we're looking forward to just having you have a bigger presence with what we're doing. Thanks very much for agreeing to partner with us on our endeavor to make Bears Barroom something special for Bears diehard fans. And that's what we're here for. We're here for the diehard fans. We've got programming that's for the casual fan, but we've got guys like you who can provide in-depth analysis and opinion, and that's what we're going to do. Thanks very much, brother.
Thank you. Again, I'm very excited and happy to be part of the team. Thank you so much.
We usually like to keep Bears on tap to under 45 minutes, but that was so much fun. We just had to go long. And the other thing is that we don't have another show here on the Bears Barroom Radio Network until Monday, June 18th, when Bears Hour Live with Draft Dr. Phil returns. And then later that week on the 21st, expect a fresh Bears 100 proof to hit your podcast stream. Then another Bears 100 proof the following week on the 27th or 28th. And then we take a couple of weeks off and then get back into the swing of things with a full slate of Bears Barroom Radio Network shows the week of July 16th, which later that week is when training camp opens. We're also planning lots of really cool stuff for you, and we'll have some announcements coming out pretty soon as we firm things up. I know a lot of you have been asking for t-shirts and hats and so forth, and we're very close to making that happen for you. And we'll have more radio shows than ever before. We'll have more outstanding articles on the website and videos coming too. So stick with us here at thebearsbarroom.com and the Bears Barroom Radio Network as we continue to grow and just have some fun following our favorite team, the Chicago Bears. One last thing, remember, if you drink, please do not drive, and always bear down.